te pure re hua Re wa ra wa ki runga ra
Kia ora and welcome to Oho RK Books. My name is Whareus Lysander, and I want to talk about my contact experiences and my contactee experiences as a contactee over the years, and how it's evolved and shifted and changed, and my perception of contact, what it means to me, and what my understanding, of course, is with the various experiences that I've had over the years. A lot of those experiences now, I look at them and I see them as what they are rather than what they were for me at the time. At the time, I didn't have the knowledge, I didn't have the understanding of the deeper levels of military budgets, black budgets. But now, looking back at those experiences, a lot of them, I have to say at least 99.9% of the experiences I've had as regards to contactees, or as it regard as a contactee, pretty close to, yeah, about that figure, almost less than 1%, I would say, from interdimensional beings. When I'm talking about craft, actual craft. It's very different when you have an experience that's empirical in the sense that you're actually having contact with an interdimensional being or an extraterrestrial being. It's very different. But the craft that I have seen flying in the night sky and also in the dawning sky, that's the story I'll share today, I have to say that my feeling is all those craft were flown by humans, Earth humans, and by military personnel. Now, my first real contact experience I can remember was in Motueka in the mid-90s when I was living down there and picking apples, living with my friends Rachel and Nathan in an apartment at the western end of Motueka. Now, once a month, they used to have a friend come over and they'd do something that I didn't want to get involved in, so I would go for a walk. I would smoke a doobie, which is a joint in this country. The doobie, a joint. I'd go for a walk. And this time of the year, when I was down there, the road was always really warm. I might have already relayed the story, but please bear with me if you've heard it before. I'd walk down this road, which is not far from where we lived, and if you know Motueka and you get to the outskirts of Motueka and you get just past the township, it's just basically a rural countryside and orchards. So I walked up this one particular road I used to walk up, and when I'd walk up this road, I would usually be in bare feet because the road was still hot, retained a lot of heat from the day, so I didn't need to wear shoes. And I was a bit of a hippie back then too. Still am. Still have bare feet most of the time, actually. But it was just how I felt. I wanted to be on the really warm concrete, the warm asphalt of the road. And I walked up the road miles. I was pretty fucking stoned, to be honest. Walked up the road for miles, and then I got to a place where there was no cars around, no houses really at all. And I thought, this is the place for me to lie in the middle of the road. No one's going to run me over. So I lay in the middle of the road. This would have been early evening, probably about between 9 and 10-ish, I guess, early evening, 8, 9, 10-ish. And it had been dark for a couple of hours. I mean, this time of the year, we're talking like late March. It was getting darker earlier. We're talking between 8 o'clock, it's getting dark. So this would be about 9 o'clock at night. I lay on the road, just looking up at the stars above me. It was a beautiful night, absolutely beautiful night. No clouds whatsoever in the sky and no wind. It was just windless, often is in that part of the country. And I lay there on the road, and I was like, I had a crystal in my pocket. I had a quartz crystal, a shard. I took it out, and I put it over my third eye, and left it sitting there, and closed my eyes, and just lay there on the middle of the road, feeling the heat permeate through my body, and through my skin, and through my clothing, and just feeling really comfortable. I could almost have gone to sleep, to be honest, but I didn't, thank goodness. But I opened up my eyes, and then momentarily after opening up my eyes, I had this instinctive feeling to look towards the southwest, towards Takaka Hill and towards the Kahurangi, what became the Kahurangi National Park, but at the time it was just the Takaka Hill. I looked over that general direction, and what I saw was a craft, a triangular-shaped craft, no more than a couple of thousand feet above where I was, re-enter into this dimension, and it skidded across the sky like a stone would skid over a pond. Bang, 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 and it left these tracks, like triangular shaped tracks where the craft had actually hit this the denser levels of frequency, of dimensional frequency, like more, like it left this skidding kind of like movement through the air. Even though the vehicle didn't skid, that left this imprint I could totally see as it moved across the sky. And then eventually it just stealthed out, and it was huge. It was a big craft, and it just basically stealthed out, and it moved towards the northeast over me, silently moved over me. I remember watching it and laying there on the road just going, okay, what's that? And it moved across the sky and kept on going and basically ignored me lying there in the middle of the road. And a moment later, I got up, I looked at it. I could still see it. It was stealthed out. It was just stealthed out with the sky, but I could still make out the shape of it as it was moving towards Nelson. I walked back to the house, excuse me, and then I didn't really speak of it so much at all after that experience. Then years later, when I was in Australia, living in Australia, I had an experience which I've related in one of my blogs about my moment I had in the Dandenong forest with my friends Aladdin and my partner at the time, Annette, where we created an amphitheatre, a concave shaped object, or it was already there. Now, I don't think for a moment that was actually an interdimensional or extraterrestrial craft. I think that particular object or that particular field of energy that solidified around us over the top of the amphitheater was actually more technological creation that we had created or was already there, and we just lit it up through our intentions and through our harmonics and toning. But up the coast, up in Port Douglas, I had what they call a flashbulb experience. Now, if you're familiar with the CE5 protocols with Dr. Stephen Greer, that's something I became familiar with last year in 2020, which I'll talk about at the end of this podcast. A flashbulb is basically a sensory craft or a drone that flies around and lets you know that we're here, so to speak. You know, if you reach out to a particular part of deep space and you see a craft, or you come across a planet with a civilization on it, and you make yourself known, like it's a remote viewing concept, as you put your consciousness into a very distant location, of course the beings that are there will see you, and then when you come back to where you've come from, they'll often follow you back to where you are and send a drone like craft which will flash at you, what they call it, a flashbulb, to give you the recognition we're here. So I had my first flashbulb experience. I was working in a bar called Mango Jam Cafe in Port Douglas. I was working the bar there with some of my bar staff that I'd met there, some friends of mine, and I one night went up to the lookout looking over Port Douglas and towards the Great Barrier Reef. And while we were up there, I hadn't smoked or touched any drugs, jeepers, for it must have been well over 4 or 5 months, I think. And then one of the cats I was working with pulled out a joint, and I had a puff. And I was just walking around, looking over the edge of the railing down towards the ocean below us, over the lookout there, and then back to my friend's combi. Then I had another puff on the joint. And I had a puff on it, and I looked up into the sky, and I had a flashbulb experience. The flashbulb went off in the sky above me, and the moment it went off, I could see, literally see, this wave of energy moving down towards me. And it hit me in the top of the skull, etherically and physically, and went through my body, into my feet, then back up again, like it bounced through my body over and over again. And I was just like, whoa! I felt this huge rush of energy come through my body, like a massive rush through my body. Literally, magnetically, my whole body was just on fire with this rushing energy of powerful orgasmic energy. I was dancing around, whoa, 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 what just happened? I didn't know what happened to me, right? And this is one of the experiences I truly feel was interdimensional. It wasn't a craft flown by humans. And my friend Felden at the time came and grabbed me because he thought I was going to jump off the edge of the lookout over the fence. And when he grabbed me, he got an electric shock from the level of energy that was going through my body. He's like, whoa, shit. And he moved away and said, you're all right. I went, yeah, great. I feel amazing. And I had a huge download that moment, a huge download that kind of came into my body and it would integrate over a large period of time due to the nature of where I was at, my conscious awakening. It took a while for that integration to fully immerse with my DNA and through my body itself and through my entire nervous system. Now, months later, when at the end of that movie that was being made up in Port Douglas, The Thin Red Line, which I was a part of, was an extra on that movie for almost 5 months. It was set in Guadalcanal in the Second World War. A bunch of A-list actors were up there, and I was just an extra with all the other extras that were up there working. And it was a great job. Like I said before once in one of my podcasts, it was probably the most fun time I've ever had in my life for 4 months. It was such a great time and amazing people, and I made some amazing connections with people that became friends for most of my life. But just the experience of being up there at that time was just magical, truly magical. It was wonderful, wonderful. So on the last night of the filming in Port Douglas, up in the Daintree Rainforest where we had been filming, there was a wrap party, and all the extras, of course, were going to crash it. It was at the Sheraton Hotel. I mean, we all decided we were going to go, and we were invited, so we were going to go, right? So we all went to the Sheraton, we went to the party, and one of my friends and I had a really dear friend who was staying at the same hostel we were staying at, and at that time she had got a Christmas card, and that Christmas card was a certain sheet of something. And we decided that we would get rid of it for her. We'd sell it all for her at the wrap party. So we did that. We went to the wrap party, and we basically sold the whole lot for her. And she was thrilled, right? And as a consequence of that, she gave us a bunch of free ones. You can decide what that was. And me and my friends all took a lot of it. That night, I hooked up with my casting agent. Which was awesome, and I went back to a friend's place who was renting a friend who was a waitress, an English waitress, who was staying in this beautiful place in Port Douglas at this resorty kind of little house that she was looking after while the occupants were in Bali over winter. And I remember getting back to the house, and then someone said there's a party up at the producer's place, and the producer of the movie was staying in this enormous resort-like villa, looking out towards the Great Barrier Reef, right at the very top of Port Douglas, looking out over the ocean. It's stellar, like amazing pad. So I said, fuck yeah, I'm into that, let's go. So it was getting around dawn. There was no way I was going to be going to sleep. So what happened was me and my friends all packed up our shit, and they got me out of Ranjini's bed, and I went with my friends down to the beach, went for a swim out into the area where they had been netted off to get the box jellyfish from getting us or stinging us. So we all swam out in the ocean, marveling at the phosphorescence as we swam through the water, tripping balls. And we got out to the edge of where the net was, and someone lit a fire. We suddenly realized that we didn't know where the shore was. Was it the shore that way or this way? We didn't know what was going on. We were a bit disorientated due to the state that we were in, out in the middle of the, well, you know, not too far out, but we're still a long way out in the ocean. Just, what's going on? So we yelled out, someone light a fire on the beach. So someone, what? He said, light a fire on the beach. We don't know where we are. Which way's the shore? So someone pulled out these palm fronds and set them on fire. So we swam back to the fire, put the palm fronds out, got out of the water, got dressed, and decided to go to the producer's place. Then we all got together, and we went over to the producer's place, and there's about 15, 20 extras all lying down in the grass in front of the balcony of this producer's place. Well, the A-lists and a lot of the actors, a lot of the B-list actors, and a lot of the people in the crew were all inside, partying inside. And, you know, we went in there and had a bit of a dance and had a bit of a laugh and hung around a little bit to the hard few people that we'd met over the time we'd been working on the film in Port Douglas. And then we went outside around dawn. We went outside. There's about 15 of us from different squads. Now, in this movie, they had different squads from Alpha through to, I think it might have been Percy's squad. There was like all these like 10 soldiers per squad. Something like that. I'm missing maybe 10 or 12 per squad. So it was members of Fox squad, members of Dog squad, and members of, I can't remember Courtney's squad's name, Ivan, maybe? Anyway, we're all lying down together on the grass, looking out towards the Great Barrier Reef. It's not quite dawn yet, but the sun is just starting to come up in the east, just starting to rise in the east. And I remember looking up into the sky thinking, this is pretty fucking epic. And that same day, we were going to go for our first dive on the reef, me and about four other guys. But we were all going to go for our first dive that morning out in the Great Barrier Reef. And we were still tripping when we went out there, but that's another story. So I was thinking like, wow, this is going to be a really amazing day today. We're going to go out and have a dive on the Great Barrier Reef. This is fantastic. What a way to finish up our time here in Port Douglas. I'm sitting there on the grass and all of us, apart from two people, are tripping, right? And one of these guys that wasn't was this cat called Ram Anamides. Now, Ram was 18, I think, when he came up to Port Douglas. He's originally from the Byron Bay region. This cat was on the level, like on the level. He was just so spiritually conscious, so aware, so evolved compared to the person that I was. He was just on the level. This kid was amazing. Great, great guy. And we're just kind of lying around in the grass. I looked up into the sky and the sun was just starting to peek up over the horizon. So there was this aching, beautiful colors coming across the sky from the east, like this reds and oranges and pinks. It was beautiful. I looked up into the sky, and it would have been, if you're looking at a clock, it would have been about 11 o'clock. If the 12 was straight up and down, come back to about 11 o'clock in the sky, it was still just a little bit dusky, just a little bit on that side of the sky. And I saw a flash in the sky. I said, hey, look at that. And everyone turned around and looked up into the sky together at the same time, right? Now, I know this wasn't a mass hallucination because we all saw it, including Ram and his mate who was straight. We saw out of that flash come 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 triangular-shaped craft moving towards the sunrise, all stealthing out as they came into this dimension. They all just stealthed out. You can still see them moving across the sky until they basically hit the rising rays of the sun, and then they vanished into the sky. I remember, I'll never forget this, I said, fucking hell, what the fuck was that? And then Ram, just casual as, said, yep, they're out there. And I remember that I just cracked up laughing. I lost my shit. I just started cracking up laughing, think, this guy is so onto it, so casual about this whole phenomenon. He thinks it's like, you know, or whatever, dude, it's nothing to worry about, you know. And I'm sort of now in that kind of same kind of place as he was back then. This is back in 1997. It would take me years to get to that place where I finally became like, yeah, that's just someone flying a craft, you know, flying a craft that's basically a human being flying a military craft. Don't worry about that. It's just back engineered stuff, or it's just Nazi Second World War technology that was kept hidden from the public as the paper cup scientists came to the States, or something like that, you know. That's how I feel about my personal research these days. But then, at that moment, everyone was like, what the fuck is that? And I said, well, you know, I didn't know. But Ram was just like, yeah, they're out there. That was pretty fucking funny. Cut to late November. I moved down to Byron Bay and was living in Byron Bay for 8 weeks, living in the bunkhouse. And I was living in a huge room in the bunkhouse with about 25 people. And one night, me and some Africana guys who were all surfers, really cool guys, were hanging out in the back of the bunkhouse after having our meal, throwing around a rugby ball, just passing it around and having a bit of a laugh and thinking about going down to the railway station for a couple of quiet beverages, hang out with some people, or go to Magnum's where... I'm not sure if Magnum was even there, but back in 1997 it was there, and hanging out there and having a bit of a boogie. And I remember passing the ball around, and I looked up in the sky, and I saw an object. It wasn't that high. It was only, I think, from my perception, it would have been between 8 and 10,000 feet. Pretty low. Moving at incredible speeds, moving and also pulling crazy maneuvers in the sky, like right angles, circles, doing crazy maneuvers, like pulling G's that if someone was inside that craft, they were probably being splattered all over the wall, you know. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And I could see it. And it wasn't any particular shape. It was just a light that was moving at incredible speeds all around the sky. And I said to the guys, look at that. And we watched it for about 10 minutes. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go upstairs and get everyone who's just had dinner to come downstairs and look at this as well and see if they can see it, right? So I brought everyone from the whole bunkhouse that was there. It must have been about 50 people downstairs at the back of the building. And said, look at that. And we all looked at it for about 10, 15 more minutes. And I got bored. Started passing the ball around again. But yeah, it's just a drone. Now that Byron Bay region is a huge energetic gridlock, I think, of ley lines and energy lines that pass through that particular region. So these craft just utilize these ley lines, these energy lines, to propel themselves across that particular region and utilize them as what you would do a train track with the technology that they utilize to move these craft around. And I don't think someone was flying that thing. I think it was a drone for sure. It was so small. It was a drone-like craft that was just moving around and just pulling crazy maneuvers in the sky. Then, doof, it was gone, right? Now, I thought right away, Pine Gap. That's the first thing I thought right away when I saw that. That's from Pine Gap. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And then I didn't see anything else for a long time after that, after Byron Bay. I didn't see anything around the west of Australia that I can remember. I had an experience where I interacted with an interdimensional due to my toning and my memory of my lifetime in Atlantis. That was at Redgate Beach, which I've talked about already, I think, on a podcast where I summoned, due to my technique and my ability and my intention at the time, which was, I was so far out of my league and so far out of my comfort zone when I did that. I summoned up an interdimensional being that came down through a portal and basically said to me, what do you want? That was definitely, without a doubt, that was a contact experience for me. And that was terrifying. Not scary, but terrifying. There's a difference. It was because I just felt completely out of control. I had basically opened up a dimensional doorway or a portal for this energy, this being, to come through. And it had come through the door, so to speak, come down and said to me, what do you want? What is it you needed? What is it you want from me? What do you want? You know, and then I'm just like, okay. Now, I'll tell the story now. I'll make it quick. I won't drag this one out because I think I have talked about this before already. It's in my blogs as well. I've written about this. The contactee, Redgate Beach, Atlantean Memory Lifetime blog. I had known someone in Nelson called Miranda, Australian girl who just did not like me at all when she first met me. And she would say to me, you know, I hate you. I don't even know who you are, but I hate you. Right? I just don't like you at all. I hate you. Just like, well, you don't even know me, but you hate me? She's like, yeah, I don't know what it is, but I just don't like you. I don't like your energy. I don't like you. And that was definitely past life shit for sure. No doubt about it. And then while I was traveling around Australia, I started hiking around the southwestern part of Australia, and I met this girl called Cynthia who became lovers with me, and I with her. We traveled together for like 3 weeks. And Cynthia and I got to Redgate Beach, and guess who was there? Miranda was there. And she turned Cynthia against me. And then one night, we were sitting around a fire at Redgate Beach. She just, both of them just lambasted me and just balls me out. I had to leave. I had to get up and fucking go. I was like, fuck this, I'm out of here. I went for a walk into the beach, made a little mound of sand looking out towards the ocean. And I thought, I'm feeling really heavy right now. I'm feeling really, really dense in my body. I need to clear this energy out. I need to feel better about who I am. Fuck this shit. You know, so I started to tone. And as I had the memory of my toning experiences from Harvey Bay and from in the Dandenong Forest with Aladdin and Annette, and Harvey Bay with the humpback whales, which is also I have blogged about as well in regards to my personal memories of my Atlantean lifetime and the person that the consciousness, my consciousness, how it embodied in this body, what I was capable of doing then and now. But I don't have the knowledge that I did have then in regards to retention. But I did this anyway. I thought this is how I clear my chakras. This is how I lift this dense energy. I toned away for about 20 minutes, facing towards the ocean, until I could feel myself getting lighter. And suddenly there's this flash of light, my third eye. I see this flash of light. And then a funnel of light comes all around me. And my toning is hitting the walls of this funnel and bouncing back towards me in an echo. I'm like, okay, this is pretty fucking weird. And then suddenly there's this beach ball-sized transparent entity with tentacles flying off it that comes down towards me, and it hovers no more than 10 feet away from me, and it's just hovering there in space. My eyes are closed. I can see this with my third eye. this being. And then I hear this voice in my head telepathically. It says, what do you want? And it's not, there's no context. I mean, there's no emotion behind that. It's just a simple request, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm out of my fucking depth here. This is for real. This is happening. This is not a hallucination. I'm straight. Completely straight. This is happening. All right. How do I fucking deal with this? Damage control. And I asked it just quietly. Look, you're freaking me out, man. I need you to go back to where you came from, please. And within moments, it just retreated back into the light. The funnel vanished into a pinprick and was gone. I thought, that was the moon. That was the moon. I just had it. That was the moon, right? But I'm looking out towards the Indian Ocean. The nearest landmass looking where I was looking from would be Mauritius or Reunion, right? It's the middle of fucking nowhere. And I'm like, okay, it's the moon, it's the moon, it's the moon. And I get up and the moon is rising in the east over towards Albany and towards Denmark in the middle of the continent. I'm like, oh, fuck, it wasn't the moon. It's for real. That was definitely an experience with another interdimensional being. My contact, the experience, for sure. Cut to, as I said before, years later. After that, I had no real contact experiences per se. I began to have experiences that weren't related to contact in regards to interdimensionals or extraterrestrial beings per se. I had moments where I had messages and downloads that were definitely from other parts of the galaxy and from beings and star families over the years, but nothing like a, oh, look, there's a craft in the sky kind of experience until I got back to New Zealand. And when I got back here, I began to become more clear about where I was going in regards to my conscious awakening, where I was going towards my life, my spirituality, my practicality, how to balance again. When I got that balance back, I began to see things again. And one of the first things I saw, I remember coming home from the laundry, the bar one night, and I was standing in my balcony, and it was a beautiful, beautiful night. This is many years ago. And I was standing on the balcony of my house where I am now, and I was just looking up at the sky thinking, what a beautiful night. What an amazing dance I had tonight. I had such fun. It was great. And then I saw this, I mean, it must have been the size of a football field. It was an enormous triangular craft just passing in the sky. What would have been out over the ocean towards Makara. So it would be the southwest coast of the North Island, right at the very end of the bottom of the North Island. This enormous triangular-shaped craft just passed in front of a bunch of stars. And the only reason why I could see it is because the light of the stars shone over the edges of this craft, and it was enormous. And I just burst into laughter, thinking, oh, yeah, whatever, dude. You know, what are you up to? What are you up to? And I knew right away, as soon as I saw it, and my feeling has been due to my own research and people like Daniel Lintz, dark journalist, like the Dr. Joseph P. Farrell, and other researchers, that these kind of craft are just back-engineered private military, private companies, I should say, private contractors building military craft. And my knowledge of this, my feeling with this, is that most of these craft are flown by humans of this planet. And it's all black budget military, private contractors building these craft, and then it's back-engineered. There might be some shared tech from interdimensionals or extraterrestrials, there might be, but I think a lot of that technology has come out of the minds of the Nazis from the Second World War and what they were studying in regards to torsion physics. If you read Dr. Farrell's books on Nazi International, you'll get more of an idea, and he has succinctly put the evidence forward. And a lot of it's speculation, but a lot of it's actually fact as well, you know, in regards to his research and the people he's researched that have provided the information, that there were some pretty tricky things going on with the Nazis in regards to torsion physics, what they were doing, what they were getting up to behind closed doors, especially in what was called Bohemia, which is now Czechoslovakia, at the Skoda factory and also in the mountains around Bavaria too. But I saw this craft and I thought, yeah, right, okay, there we go, just another human-occupied craft. No problem. Funny. Ha ha. Good on ya. And then last year, after a lockdown, one of my friends sent me through the Stephen Greer documentary, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, and I watched it, and I realized that it was like a turning point for me, that it was time for me to reconnect in a way with my star family, but also to have the skill base to be able to do this properly to actually connect with interdimensional beings and extraterrestrials from my heart, but learn how to do it with a group, but learn how to do it safely and make sure that I was doing it for the right reasons if I chose to do it. Because before it was just like, it just happened for me. I wasn't really reaching out in a way that I wanted, that I had the motive or I had the understanding or the nuances to be able to achieve this without feeling like I was out of my fucking depth, right? So I went to one of the first group meetings of this new group of people in Wellington that were working with Margot Broadhead, who is the coordinator of the CE5 network in this particular part of the island of the North Island of New Zealand. She's from the Wairarapa. And she's a group over there and a group in Kapiti and a group here in Wellington. So I came over and I was a part of the group, the first initial group that got back together again in this particular region in Wellington. We got together and we met for the first time, and I instantly had a rapport with a number of people in that group, and we had our first experience of practicing the CE5 protocols and me learning them, Dr. Greer's protocols, to actually reach out to communicate with extraterrestrials, interdimensional civilizations and interdimensionals. I began to have really full-on immediate contact due to the nature of the group, strengthening the strong group environment, the intention of the group, and I immediately began to have contact. And this was, for me, it was like full-blown, okay, this shit's for real kind of moments, right? And as a consequence of doing that with the group, I was having flashbulb experiences all the time. Whenever I went outside and I went for a walk in nighttime, I'd see flashbulbs all over the place. I'd go by myself to Makara Beach. I'd practice the protocols there within minutes of me coming back into my body, vectoring back into my body after being projecting my consciousness out to deep, 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 deep space or beyond the galaxy into other galaxies and coming back into my body again. Then I have a flashbulb experience there. Then I would go a couple of times to Makara Beach with friends. I would take them through the protocols as well. And the moment I did that with them, they had actually experiences where they had flashbulb experiences. And one of my friends, Kez, she lives in Wainuiomata, which is a valley over from Wellington over the other side of the harbour. And she's been having flashbulb experiences since she did this practice whenever she goes outside as well. So the contact is definitely there for those of us who have reached out from our hearts with these particular protocols. Believe me, they work. They're amazing. Fantastic. So this is empirical for me. This is the experience of seeing craft. Then one night I came home from a friend's place not long ago, maybe a couple of months ago, maybe end of the year, well, more like a couple of months now, maybe 6 months actually, it's November last year. I came home one night and I'd only seen flashbulbs apart from my one experience I had last year, which I will relate before I finish off this podcast, which was very interesting and very powerful, which I think I might have talked about already in regards to the plant medicine podcast I did, but I'll keep that one brief as well because I don't want to get into detail too much, because if you listen to that podcast, you'll hear me talk about the experience in greater detail. But one night I came back from a friend's place and I got home, and this is the only time I've seen a craft with the Stephen Greer 5CE5 protocol. I came home one night, I was still on my balcony looking at the stars, went through the protocol machination, through the protocol techniques, and when I did this, I came back into my body after vectoring out to deep space. And then I saw what they call an ambassador ship, which is a blue ship. And this blue ship skimmed across the sky from the southwest towards the northeast, directly, almost directly above me, and then slowed down. And then it phased out. So it was right above me. They'd come to check me out, pretty much. I was like, whoa, okay, now that's interesting. And it didn't have any particular shape. It was more like a round craft, and then it became more triangular. Not quite triangular, isn't like a hard triangle, but it had a point on it. And then it became round again, and then it sort of moved across the sky, and then it vanished, and it was gone. And I was like, wow, okay, that's interesting. That's very interesting. Beautiful. Quite an amazing experience to have that. And I thought, wow, this is the one. And since then, my own personal experiences when I'm actually venturing out using the CE5 protocols for contact, what I usually have now is not so much actual physical sighting of a craft. I have more of a telepathic connection. I have this feeling of something around me, an energy around me often, no perceptible sight of seeing a being or a craft as such, but a feeling like there's something around me. And I'll have a telepathic message in my head that'll say, for example, I did the CE5 protocols not long ago, and when I did that, I had a presence around me, and I saw a very tall, thin being with whitish-grayish skin with long white hair, and it was wearing a dark, like a black skin type, sort of like it looked like a PVC suit, is what I can say, a PVC kind of like a bodysuit, but with a flared kind of skirt thing around it. And this being was kind of crouching down next to me, and it whispered in my ear, Cassiopeia. And I turned around, and of course I didn't see anything there naturally when I turned around to see what was going on, but I could feel a presence and the image in this being in my mind's eye, formulated of this being crouching next to me and whispering in my ear, Cassiopeia. So that being was very friendly and was not scary at all. It was just telling me, hey, this is where I'm from, and this, you found me. So to speak. That was one night down at Makara Beach. I was out by myself practicing the protocols, which I haven't practiced for a while, actually. And I'll finish on this one. This is what happened to me last year. This is something I've heard before in my plant medicine podcast. Last year, I was taking a few weekends in a row, a few Friday nights in a row, I was taking a very small but powerful dose of Wiriroa psilocybe psychedelic truffles. I was having enough to get me into a place where I had an altered state of consciousness. I wasn't visually tripping, like I wasn't seeing fractals or geometric shapes. I wasn't, my visual cortex was not altered in any way. My body was definitely expanding out into the cosmos in a big way. And I went to Wright Hill in Karori. This is a particular spot where there used to be a gun emplacement many, many years ago before the First World War and during the Second World War. The gun's gone, but there's a particular spot up there which I often go up to watch sunsets. I went up there that one Friday night, and as I got up there, I did the CE5 protocols, which is sort of naughty because I do say don't do it. This protocol under any kind of substance, don't do it while you've taken any substances. It's not a good thing. But I was in my heart. My heart was so open, so I felt safe. So I practiced, went out there into the deep, deep cosmos, and saw a couple of craft, and they were just floating in space. And I say craft, they were basically like big circular round lights without any particular shape. They were just moving through space. And they saw me, and they stopped. I saw them, and I vectored back to where I was in my body, and they followed me. I had a flashbulb experience, and I heard a voice in my head say, go home and go to bed. Yes, Dad. Yes, Mum. You know, so I went home, and I started to laugh, like, yeah, I'm going to go home and go to bed. I felt so thrilled by the experience of going home and going to bed. I was so excited about it. I raced home, laughing all the way, driving all the way home. I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to go to bed. I'm so excited about going to bed. Yes. I drove home. Got undressed. I'm like, I'm going to go to bed. I feel so happy about going to bed. I'm so excited about going to bed. I felt like, wow, it's not Christmas, mate. Calm down. I got undressed, hopped into bed, and then just as I began to got into that state between sleep and awareness and being awake, just in that state, I had an experience where I began to feel something push up and move across my body in the bed and push down on the duvet and move across my body, like slink over my body and begin to embrace me. And there was this deep feeling of love and acceptance. It wasn't scary. It wasn't terrifying. It was beautiful. It felt really, really gentle and nurturing. And it embraced my entire body. And what this was this field of awareness that traveled across space. Now, for me, in my experience, interdimensionals, extraterrestrials appear to me quite often as a field of awareness, which we already are. We all are. But this is like remote viewing, I guess you could say, on some level. It's where you're projecting your awareness by locating your awareness or your consciousness to another part of the universe or another part of time, across creation. You know, this is the big thing with remote viewing. Anything's possible. So this being's consciousness, field of awareness, read my own field of awareness and then discovered a person in my life that I had a great affection for. I loved in my heart. In my heart, I truly adored. and I felt comfortable and safe with. Now, this being, this field of awareness, became this person, manifested into her physical form next to me in the bed. I'm not making this shit up. This actually happened to me. And I remember rolling over. Even though my eyes were closed the whole time, I could see her looking at me. But I knew it wasn't her. It was this being. Now, this being and I mean, this was for real. This was tactile. This was real. I had sex with this being. Tantric Taoist sex with this being, integrating, exchanging information on a cellular, a deep cellular level, healing on a deep, deep, deep level for me. And I remember every sensation, the muscular cramping, the orgasm, when this being and her, this person's body was orgasming around me, on me, on top of me, with me, together for hours. It was probably the most beautiful and profound sexual experience I've had in my life. And I mean that sincerely. Now, looking at that situation, it was beyond any physical experience I've had in my life with a human being. It was fucking crazy how amazing it was and how much I loved. It was like I was making love. I was ravishing in love this woman that I had loved since I met her. And I was having this experience with this being, but I knew it wasn't her. I knew it was this something else, this other being. But it didn't matter. I just shared in the experience. I integrated from the experience completely. No ejaculation. Just enormous, powerful orgasmic experiences. And this is like Close Encounters of the Sixth Kind. Literally. And, you know, I was in the, eventually the sex stopped and I rolled over and on my side and this being was holding me. I could feel it begin to dissolve. It was dissolving around me. And in that space that's left behind, I just felt this sense of ecstaticness. I was completely ecstatic. And I drifted off to sleep. I woke up the next morning feeling absolutely off my noodle in regards to how ecstatic I was. I was so happy. I felt so enriched, so beautiful. I felt so loved, so accepted. It was probably, like I said before, it was the most insane experience and probably the sexual highlight of my life. Now, at first I thought to myself, I was just tripping. That wasn't fucking real. It can't have been real, right? It can't have been real. Months later, I went and saw my friend Tabash. I asked him about the experience. He said, look, this is you and your multidimensional levels of existence that you are entering into as a human being, understanding your multidimensional self and the intellectualizing it and the conceptualizing it for you are over. You have had experiences in your life where you understand the levels of multidimensional existence. And this was one of them to give you that notion of what you are capable of doing. Every human is capable of this experience if they choose to have it. I really feel that. I'm nothing special here. It's just my openness and my intention and my levels of awareness and conscious awakening. And he told me also, look, don't get too carried away with this. You don't want to do this all the time. You're living in a human body. Come back to your body, you know, and remember that you're in a body. And, you know, sex is not necessarily, it can be like that, but it can also be the same way, but with a human. I was like, okay, gotcha. Now I know what I'm capable of experiencing. Why would I want to go back to just normally having a physical experience? And the answer is I don't want to. Naturally. Okay. Well, thanks for listening to this podcast. I really appreciate it. I hope you got some value from it, some pretty cool anecdotes from my experiences. There'll be more to share at another time. Ma te wa. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. Dee 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 ho. Dee dee dee.